This call is now being recorded. Thank you.
Michele, would you like a quick roll call?
Please.
Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. On today's call, we have Michele Nalon, Michael Collins, Chris Chaplow, Mike O'Connor, Barbara Steele, Rudy Vunsnick, Anil George, Barry Cobb, Paul Diaz, Tim Ruiz. From staff, we have Glenda Saint-Géry, Marika Konings, Olaf Nordling, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. Apologies, we have James Bladell, Kevin Erdman, Eric Brown. If I could just remind everyone, please to state their names when speaking. Thank you.
Okay, then, everyone, good afternoon. It's Michele here. Did you all get the agenda for today? By email?
Yep.
Okay. Excuse me. I think I need more coffee. Right then. Did we get another constituency statement earlier today? Was that my imagination?
This is Marika. I can give an update on what I've received so far. So far, I've received statements for this working group from the registrar constituency, the registry constituency, or stakeholder group, I should say, sorry, and the IPC. So the question is whether any of the other constituencies or stakeholder groups are still working on their statements or whether they're not planning to submit any. The statement you saw earlier today was actually for the other working group, for the post-expiration working group.
Thank you, Marika. Sorry, I get confused. Like, I get so many emails from ICANN, I get confused which group, working group is which. So we still have nothing from the business constituency for this working group?
Not from the business constituency, not from the NCUC, and not from the ISP.
Right, okay.
Chris, can I just come in, Michele? I had a brief email with Mike Rodenbach, and apparently the business constituency were passing on this because there were so many other things going on with the charter, but they were hoping to perhaps comment on the first draft report. Thanks.
Okay. I will send Mr. Rodenbaugh a nastygram via email later. He promised me faithfully that there'd be submissions, but obviously he doesn't. That's fine. That's okay. That's all right. I mentioned to one of the ISP people, and they said that they'd do something about it, but they obviously haven't bothered either. So, okay. I'm not feeling the love, people. I'm not feeling the love. Okay. Well, they had their chance. So, the public comment. Marika sent out an analysis grid with the email earlier today. Did you all get that?
Michele, can I ask one more question on the previous point? So can I go ahead and just make a similar grid for the constituency statements received so we can maybe review that on the next call, as it's not likely we'll be receiving any other constituency statements at this point, I guess?
Well, I personally think that would be fine by me. Anybody have any objections to that?
This is Mikey. Let me... I'm now done with my Minnesota passport, so let me ping Rodenbaugh and see if I can come up with something from the BC. Marika, as far as we're concerned, go ahead and build the grid, but I may be able to get something to you before the next call.
Okay, and then either, you know, even if you submit it later, it shouldn't be too difficult to add that information to it. So I think it would be helpful to have, you know, as much constituency stakeholder input at this point in the process as possible. So,
yeah, I get that. I'll take an action item on that one.
I'm going to send him an email as well. It's the BC statement. Okay, so if Marika, if you could do that grid thing again, I think that would be helpful.
Okay.
Since nobody's said that they don't want it, so we'll work on the basis that they do want it. Okay, then. So, looking, anything else on the constituency statements at this time? No? Okay. Did you all guess the grid from Marika earlier today on the public comments?
I did.
Okay, so it's a little Excel spreadsheet thingy.
This is Marika. It's also up on Adobe Connect.
So I think during the meeting in Seoul as well, we also had a bit of a discussion about what should happen with the domains if they are transferred, which led to a little bit of an argument between myself and Helen, I think. Helen isn't on the call, though, is she? Okay, so, Marika, did we go through any of these comments already, or is this new, is it?
If I recall well, we quickly looked at it, but I think then decided to leave it for this call to go through them and discuss them.
This was around the time that I practically fell asleep at the seat in Seoul, I think. Okay, so that's why I don't remember. Okay. Yes. Okay, having me or chair a meeting at that time in the morning is probably not a good idea. Okay, then, so if you want to, would you like to walk us through some of these, Marika?
Yes. I'm happy to do so. I do want to point out that, of course, these are all abstracts from the different comments that were submitted, and, you know, I would encourage everyone to review the comments in detail and do point out as well if there are any items that were left out or, were taken, should be taken differently. So looking at the first comment, the person basically raises the question, does the incidence of hijacking warrant the development of a new procedure?
Okay. Anybody have any thoughts on that? No? Okay. Moving on.
One question would be, I guess, for the group to ask, would some further research be needed to indeed identify how often this happens and, whether that should play a role in addressing this question, or is it because if it just happens once and the cost can be detrimental to a person that, you know, it should warrant a policy process for change?
This is Mike.
Okay.
I'm a little puzzled about where we're at. Are you asking our opinion and then we'll fill in this part of the grid? That where we're at?
Well, part of the idea is, I think it's part of the process of trying to, really assess comments received and try to integrate them in the deliberations of the working group. The idea behind this grid is to have some kind of discussion on the different comments received, maybe identify as well if some of these comments warrant further research or follow-up with the person who submitted them, or make a note saying, well, you know, yes, we should take this into account when we come to our conclusions, as a way as well for those that have submitted comments to show what the working group actually did with those comments. I mean, it might be saying as well, like, well, we don't think it's relevant in this question or we disagree, but it's just a way of tracking public comments received and, you know, providing feedback as well to the community on how the comments were evaluated and assessed.
Okay,
this is Tim.
Okay. Sorry.
I was just going to make a couple comments, but Mike, if you still had more questions, you can go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was going to swing around to comments, so go ahead.
Okay, I was just going to throw out a couple of ideas. The current policy makes it really an optional thing that after a transfer to another registrar occurs, it says that registrar may deny a transfer for up to 60 days, but it doesn't require that they deny a transfer for up to 60 days. I think, I'm not positive, but I think there may be one or two registries that actually implemented that as a requirement in their registry, but I can't be sure. So there's, you know, so that's one possibility of addressing one of the comments that, because it, basically they're suggesting that there be some requirement of no changes after a transfer, and that would include another transfer. So instead of, you know, an optional thing, perhaps, you know, explore whether that could be requirement that a transfer can occur for a certain amount of time after a transfer.
Just trying to clarify this because we're getting the sentence alone is scary. So you're saying that at present the policy is a bit vague, but a lot of registrars seem to have adopted it, that once the domain has been transferred to them, they don't allow a further transfer for 60 days. Is that what you're saying?
Right. I think there might even be a misconception that that's a requirement, and I don't believe it is. If you look closely at the policy, you know, the word used is may. So it isn't that, you know, that it's required. But, yeah, I think you're right. Probably a number of registrars. I know at GoDaddy we just make that a matter of policy that after we receive a transfer, we don't allow it to be transferred for another 60 days, specifically for that reason. But, you know, that may not be implemented across all registrars. So just throwing that out there as a possible option or something to discuss, especially based that we received at least one comment sort of to that effect. So it might be something to explore.
And you also suggested that some of the registries already have implemented this as a matter of policy.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, but I'd have to look further, but I believe that it's in my mind, it seems, I recall that VeriSign may have implemented that, and so that a transfer that comes in with 60 days of a transfer doesn't even get past the registry. I wouldn't guarantee that, but it seems to be what I recall.
Hi, this is Barbara, and I'm sorry to interject in lieu of the cue there, but we actually do not have a systematic restriction to stop transfers 60 days after they've been transferred. We do have a systematic restriction that will prevent transfers from occurring if it's within 60 days of the initial registration.
Okay.
Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah, that's probably where I got that from. And I think, in fact, if you look at the transfer, that's even an optional thing. So I don't think that's necessarily has to be the way it is, but registries probably, you know, they're free to implement that. At any rate, so that'd be one thing to explore. The other thing I was going to bring up that we talked about briefly in Seoul was just, you know, in regards to both this question and probably the next one, issue B, the possibility of a part of the solution maybe being that the name server, any name server changes could be undone temporarily, you know, until a resolution of any dispute could be achieved in some way. So I wanted to make sure that was brought back up to or looked at as a possibility.
I'm going to let Michael Collins and then Mikey have both got their hands up. Michael Collins?
Yes, thank you.
Sorry about that.
I was just wanted to comment on the first comment and just simply go on record saying that I don't think research on whether hijackings warrant development of a procedure or policy. I think it's clear to most of us that it doesn't take very many substantial hijackings to create a big problem. I think it's certainly worth our time. Thank you.
Okay. Mikey?
Yeah, this is Mikey. I pretty much echo Michael's comment that in terms of the matrix, yes. You know, the work group view, does the incident warrant further procedure development? You bet. And then also chime in behind Tim's comment that I think one of the possible responses is indeed the notion of slowing down both further transfers between registrars and the possibility of slowing down changes to DNS. I think that a good response to a runaway train is to slow the train down.
Okay. Anybody else have any thoughts on that? Okay. Right, so does incidents of hijacking warrant development of new procedure? Does anybody think that the incidents of hijacking does not warrant development of new procedure? It's a horrible sentence. Does anybody think that we're wasting our time even looking at it in light of the number of hijacks or lack of them? Does everybody think then that that hijacking does need to be looked at?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So nobody's dissenting on that? Okay.
It's Chris here. I'm not dissenting on it. It's just we don't know numbers, do we? We just have a feeling that something needs to be done. Just picking on that word incidents. Thanks.
Okay.
Mikey,
go ahead, Mikey.
I think Michael Collins nailed it when he said it doesn't take very many substantial hijackings to prove the need, and there are certainly documents that can describe the substantial hijackings that have already taken place.
And the other thing as well is the word is incidents, not incidents. So it's not actually a plural, it's just incidents, as in the fact that it happens.
Right.
So it wasn't actually...
This is Tim McKinley. I'm sorry, I can't get my hand up. I don't have access
okay.
right now.
That's okay.
I'm actually working off printed documents, believe it or not.
How old school?
Yeah. So if you know, one thing to keep in mind is the SAC did do some research into that. So there's that hijacking report, you know, that we reference. And I guess I agree. I'm not sure, you know, additional research is needed. I think there's some good material there. I don't think much has changed since then because nothing's really been done. You know, the problem with hijacking is that what happens is it's either, you know, a big profile situation that really gives the industry a black eye when it occurs, you know, such as the Panics incident, or, you know, it's easy to you know, sort of push it aside in other cases because they're not very public. However, you know, anybody involved in it, I mean, you know, we're talking about possibly devastating them financially, you know, when you're talking about small businesses or home-run businesses. So I think it doesn't take a lot to make it an issue that probably should be looked at before it really, you know, kind of gives our industry, you know, a black eye, bad reputation. We've got enough of that already. So that's just my personal opinion.
Okay. Okay, so we all agree, look, there's problems with hijacking. We've got the SAC stuff and everything else, and okay. So the working group view is, yes, it's valid. Should we be adding in something here about next steps, follow-up, Marika?
Kaylee? I'm sorry, I had my hand up. This is Barbara.
Oh, hi. Sorry, Barbara. Go ahead.
Okay. I know that the discussion that we've had within the registry stakeholder group is that we do feel that it is a valid issue that does need to be discussed. We're just not certain that it actually was intended to be addressed by the transfer policy itself or the dispute policy that's associated with that.
Okay. So what exactly were the registries thinking about?
Well, I think it's something that the industry overall probably should address and maybe should put some best practices in place. But I don't know, you know, again, I don't know that we feel that a modification to the transfer policy itself is necessarily the way to go with it.
Okay. Anil, George?
Hi, I just wanted to say that, you know, the SAC report, I thought, was pretty valuable in assessing the problem and offering at least some practical suggestions for us to consider. And I know our sort of mandate for this committee is drawn from that, and I think it would be a reasonable thing for us to kind of review that ESSAC report and really look at some of their specifics and maybe have that in mind as, you know, practical things to really consider how, whether they should be implemented, how, that sort of thing.
Thank you. Okay. This is Tim again.
Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, just was going to comment on what Barbara said. I think that she makes a very good point. And you know, there might be though situation where, based on what we think best practices are could be, that there might need to be some tweaking at least of the policy, perhaps, in order to make those best practices work or you know, make them viable. So. But that we won't know until we can kind of, you know, explore a little bit more what best practices might look like. But it certainly still could mean that we might need to tweak somehow the policy to make that workable.
Okay. Mikey?
This is Mikey. I wanted to follow up with Barbara, too. Barbara, how strongly do the registries feel? I mean, one of the things that starts to emerge in my mind is the notion of changing that word may to should or must in the policy so that we get a uniform 60-day ratchet on inter-registrar transfers. Would the registries throw their bodies on the tracks over this? Or I guess I wanted to get a sense of the political.
No, I don't think that they would throw their bodies on the tracks for that, Mikey. So,
cool.
I mean, we're obviously open to discussion because we do recognize that there are a lot of serious issues around it. And as everyone has said, it only takes one, you know, high-profile hijacking to really bring a lot of attention to it.
Yeah. Because, you know, one of the nice things about that particular one is that it strikes me that it probably doesn't operationally disrupt registries and registrars as much, since many of them are already aware of it, and many, like in the case of GoDaddy, they're already doing it. And so I'm attracted to solutions for which there's already a basis in current operations. I don't know if, you know, Paul, does your gang over at Network Solutions have a similar sort of slow-down-the-train approach to inter-registrar transfers?
Yeah, this is Paul Diaz. Yes, we do, Mikey. I can't go into great detail. It's a little, my understanding, it's a more sophisticated calculation that we do than what some of the other registrars do in terms of our slowing down or even locking a name. But yes, we definitely have something in place to help mitigate against illicit transfer attempts.
Well, you know, this is Mikey again. I guess the thought that I've got is that it sounds like our goal shared, which is hijacking's a big problem, and to the extent that we can, it would be useful to slow the process down. And then as sort of a consumer advocate type on the other side, I'd be willing to work with folks to find a way to do that with the least operational disruption to the registries and registrars. That might be a pretty productive kind of conversation, and maybe what we could do is explore some of the options that the different, you know, like Network Solutions and GoDaddy and others have, Michaela, your gang, for example, in terms of...
Oh, we're small, we're tiny.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, you know, we need to address the needs of tiny as well, because I don't don't want to lay huge operational burdens on folks, and at the same time, I would like to figure out a way to slow the train down. And so if we could figure out a way that did that, that didn't burden anybody unnecessarily, I think then we've got a solution that everybody can sort of sign up in.
Well, I mean, the other thing as well, which I suppose just to throw kind of a massive spanner in here is, how many of you have seen the VeriSign's new service for higher value domains?
That would be called the registry lock service.
Exactly.
I have, Mikey, I have not, but, you know, that could go into the pile of options that we could take a look at.
Barbara, could you give Mikey an overview of that service?
Sure. Basically, what it is that registrars can identify high-value names and basically come to the registry and provide us with a list of those names, and we would put various server hold statuses on those names to prevent either changes to the name servers or transfers of the domain names, what have you. And in order to unlock those domain names, basically it would, in order to make changes to those, the registrar has, I believe it's two authorized individuals who can basically contact us, provide various authentications to authorize us to unlock the domain names to the extent that they want to make changes on those, and then we would lock those back down once those changes are made. So it basically provides an added layer of security so that those domain names are not modified unless this additional step is taken. That's the nutshell version.
This is Mikey. That's intriguing. I have a number of...
One thing I'll just interject very quickly is what she didn't tell you was how much that it costs money. It's not free.
That's true. It is not a free service. And quite honestly, off the top of my head, I don't have the pricing.
I do, but I'm not too sure if I'm allowed to share it. Marika, you wanted to jump in?
Yeah, I just had a question, not on this issue, but more on the discussion on, you know, talking about maybe having a 2-week or 60 days prevention of a transfer after a transfer. And I was just wondering, and it's probably a question for Tim and Paul, do you get any complaints about that policy? Are people, you know, are there certain scenarios where people are not happy about having that lock on it, just to take that into account as well for the discussion, whether, you know, there would be parties or certain scenarios where people might not like that policy.
This is Paul. There's always somebody who complains about everything, no matter the old adage of no good deed goes unpunished. But in Lease Network Solutions' case, we have, over the past 2 years now, continued to refine the calculation that we do to lock a name. We used to get a lot of complaints because we took a broad brush. We've continued to refine it. A whole series of things must happen before we do it. The other thing, ultimately, and the important characteristic that we put in that has lowered the complaint level dramatically was that an individual can still always call into customer service. And once we are reasonably assured that this is, in fact, the legitimate registrant, and there are a couple of basic things they can do to prove their bona fides, we will unlock the name upon their request. And overwhelmingly, in the instances where somebody's calling in and doing that, they all say, yeah, it took a couple minutes, but they understand what we were doing, and they appreciate the effort that we were undertaking. The people who complain are usually the ones that are actually trying to game the system. And even then, it's important to note that we've seen a dramatic decrease in the number of complaints, given the sophisticated matrix that we go through before we lock a name.
So yeah, this is Tim.
Go ahead.
Well, we're evidently not sophisticated because we just it's just a blanket rule. If you transfer a name into GoDaddy, it's not transferable out for 60 days. The only way around that would be if somebody called in and we were able to work something out with them through customer service.
which customer service isn't really empowered in that particular case. It would, it'd have to go up probably another level before we would allow it. But the number of complaints we get on that, they're very minimal. I just don't even recall that as being an issue that's very often discussed at all as far as the complaints that we receive.
Okay, it's Mikey again. So I think we've got two threads, and we might want to consolidate some. It seems to me that the registry service that Barbara's describing is that's something I'm entranced at finding more out about, and Barbara, maybe you and I can carry that on offline, because I've got some very high-value names, and I'd like to explore how I could get the service turned on. There's a call for you to figure that out. But in terms
of... transfer the domains to me, Mikey, and I'll charge you a fortune for the service.
Oh, good. I'm sorry. Transferring domains out of the existing registrar is why I'm on this task force, and I'm not transferring until I understand that they'll get there. Meanwhile, I think that in terms of the thread on the matrix, first of all, I think this is a very productive thread, and if we could summarize it by saying, yes, we agree that this is warrants development of a new procedure, yes, slowing the process down seems like a good idea, yes, there's language in the current policy that could perhaps be changed, and yes, there are some options to explore. Maybe we leave this cell with that summary in the next steps follow-up column and try and get on to another line in this matrix, because if we're going to get through this whole matrix on the call, we've got to work.
Could I just make one suggestion? This is Tim. Just one suggestion, Mike, and that is that in regards to a new procedure, instead of just yes, that you know, that might be a maybe, it may not need a whole procedure. It may just need some, again, like I talked about, tweaking of the policy to make certain other practices possible. So I'm not sure, you know, a whole procedure is necessarily called for. Perhaps, it's not definite. Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to nail that in there. I agree with you there, Tim. If that we can figure out a less intrusive way to get her done, that's fine. But I think in terms of the summary of our position, at least on this call, seems like we're pretty aligned and that we may want to just leave it at that for now. I mean, another way to do this is drive this one all the way to the end, to our position for the report on this call. And I guess I'd throw that back to Marika and Kaylee in terms of how you want to run the meeting, because this is pretty productive discussion, and maybe we could just drive to our conclusion right now.
I don't know, Marika is probably has a better idea of what the actual processes are. I mean, personally, I'm happy that people are actually discussing stuff fruitfully instead of going around in circles. Marika, do you want to have any thoughts?
We always are productive.
I completely agree with your assessment. I think as long as we're having a full discussion, it's good to go down that track. If eventually, at some point, we'll come back again to the public comments. So whatever the group decides.
Okay. Tim, did you want to jump in again?
Yeah. You know, just one thing I was thinking about, I'm looking at issue A and issue B, just to kind of throw a suggestion out, is that, you know, they are related in a lot of ways, and we're talking about inappropriate transfers, whether it's a hijacking or, you know, a subtle difference would be if, you know, an admin contact transferred a name without the registrant's permission, or there's some dispute between them. And so really, you know, in a lot of ways it seems like whatever resolution we could find would solve both issues. Now, you know, perhaps not, but I think that's a possibility. So necessarily considering those as two separate things, you know, we might want to consider that they're related, at least very closely, as we're looking at the possible resolutions.
Okay.
Mikey? I'm keen on that idea. I think that you're right, Tim. I think that really the notion that's popped into my head today is that the best solution for these kinds of problems is to slow the process down, to give various sides of the complaint time to resolve it before the damage is irretrievably done. And so I think that solutions that arrive at that probably solve both of these problems at the same time.
Just I'd add in personally as well, I mean, one of the things that, from my perspective personally, I think it's imperative is that, you know, that while slowing, I like the idea of the slowing things down concept, but I'm also very much in favor of least damage. In other words, somebody I've mentioned it before about rolling back the name servers if there is a dispute.
And you know, this is Mikey again. I agree with that comment as well. Although in some cases it may be that there's more gray area there. But I mean, one of the things that appeals to me about Tim's and GoDaddy's approach is that it's just simple. It's just click 60 days. If you really, really want to do something out of the norm, you have to convince us, but the norm is 60 days. End of story. And the nice thing about that is just the simplicity of it all.
This is Tim. I think, though, what that doesn't necessarily address, Mike, is that if a domain gets transferred inappropriately, just slowing that down or just not allowing that to get transferred again for a period of time is probably helpful in that, you know, we've got kind of keep things static till we get things resolved. But if, you know, someone's livelihood or it's really high profile or whatever, that domain name that's involved, getting the resolution fixed, I think, is, you know, that's the real issue. Which registrar is managing the domain name, that may need to get resolved and get it under the right appropriate party's control, blah, blah, blah. But what the damage that's being done is that the name isn't resolving any longer to where, you know, it needs to be or should be or whatever. So I still think there's that issue that could possibly be addressed by something like, you know, being able to roll back the name servers while the rest of it's being resolved.
Oh, I see what you're driving at. Yeah, I'm for that.
Marika? You have your hand up?
This is Marika. I had a bit of a similar point because, indeed, the 60-day, you know, might be a good approach, but there's still the question, how do you resolve the dispute around a hijacking? Would that then be, would those 60 days be sufficient to go through a normal TDRP, or should there still be something that expedites the, you know, either rolling back or, return of the domain name? So there's still another element that would need to be addressed, I guess, as part of the discussion.
Just my own view is I think they're two separate things. One is if you introduce a uniform policy whereby it's no longer a matter of ambiguous, it might be, it could be, or whatever period of X between transfers. But the other thing is, you know, how do you address an inappropriate transfer? They're two separate things. If you follow me. In other words, one, by introducing the slowing down thing, you're looking at solving the problem across the board, but you still have the problem of how to address an inappropriate transfer should it take place, if that makes sense.
This is Mikey. I think that you're right, but that Marika is also right that we, in another piece of our...
Marika's always right.
This is
rule number one.
So I think that it's okay to have them separated for now, but eventually what we're going to have to do is reconcile the two to make sure that they don't, you know, if we come up with solutions, that the solutions don't conflict with each other. And I bet that's what Marika's really driving at.
Okay.
And this is Tim. So another, you know, way to look at it might be that, you know, we have the UDRP, we have the TDRP, if I got that right, too many acronyms. So there are some dispute resolution processes that exist, and then in other cases, you know, either one of them might not really work. You know, the reasons or the situation behind an inappropriate transfer can be so varied, and that's what part of the problem is that, you know, it talks about, you know, urgent return or resolution, and that word urgent, I mean, we can urgently solve a problem after we figure out what it is, but it's figuring out what the situation is that really takes a lot of time, and it's difficult to hurry that and then really make a right decision. So that's where, you know, the idea that what can we do to minimize the damage while we allow the necessary time for the situation to get resolved appropriately through, perhaps, already existing processes. And, you know, one of those might be to, you know, just solve the resolution issue immediately and while the rest of it's getting resolved. So that's kind of where I was at on that. And so I don't know if we necessarily need, you know, to have a different dispute resolution process, but just somehow to be able to minimize the damage while allowing the time for maybe existing processes to work.
Oh, this is Mikey. I think that paragraph is probably worthy of the report because I think that really encapsulates what we're struggling with here. This notion of providing time for existing processes to work and adding McKaylee's minimize the damage notion. And I think now we're sort of at the nub of agreement.
Okay. Any other thoughts on that for the moment? No? Okay.
I might put it in the BC constituency statement and look really smart.
You could do that, which would mean we'd actually get a statement from the BC, which would make me really happy.
Yeah, I'm working on that. I think you'll get one.
I already pinged Rodenbaugh. Unfortunately, I can't poke him in the eye virtually via email, but if I could, I would.
Well, Barry Cobb and I are hard at work as your drafting team here. So.
Okay. Right. Okay, then. There was another comment there. Working group should first assess effectiveness of TDRP. TDRP, which one's that now? That's the one which is currently in place, where we escalated to the registry. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, fine. Anybody have any thoughts on that?
This is Mikey.
Again? Hello, Mikey.
I'm wondering if we have... I mean, every time we get a statement, assess the effectiveness before we act. My immediate reaction is, have we already done such an assessment that the person who wrote the comment doesn't know about? But in the last one, we've already got an ESSAC report on the first one. Is there work that's been done already on the effectiveness on the TDRP that we could...
Well, I think we already discussed how many TDRP there had been in previous calls. I think the number was minuscule. So somebody could correct me on that.
Yeah, that's true.
This is Barbara, yes. From VeriSign's perspective, we've seen very few relative to the number of transfers that are completed, especially.
Did you have an actual figure on the number that you'd seen per year?
I don't. We do include, you know, that information in our monthly registry operator reports, so we could go out and pull it. But I don't have it in front of me.
If you wouldn't mind getting us some kind of figure, so we can just say concretely, okay, based on VeriSign's experience, there've been X number in a period of Y. Therefore, you know, we feel the following or whatever. If you wouldn't mind, Barbara, that would be appreciated.
Sure, I can pull the information from, say, 2008, and I'll send that over. I think that I believe it was Paul and Tim on previous calls had made some, you know, pretty significant comments. So
That's why my hands
are. A lot of issues are resolved at the registrar level before even getting to us. So if you're just
looking at
TDRP, then I can't provide you that data because that is what comes to the registry.
Well, exactly. Now, this was the point being, the question, the comment was referring to the TDRP, which we just need to, just so we can address it. Paul, you have your hand up, and so does Michael. I'll take Paul first.
Okay, and just to follow on what Barbara said in previous calls, both James and I have noted what Barbara said, that very often, because of the way the TDRP is currently written, registrars very often feel it's in their customers' best interest to work it out amongst the registrars, i.e. a really small subset of disputed transfers actually make it up to the registry level through the formal TDRP process. I have no problem with providing whatever the stats are. We just need to make it extremely clear to people that those are the stats based on what reaches the registry level, and that it's clearly understood that many, if not most, registrars have informal processes in place to try and resolve inappropriate transfers at the registrar level. That the any official TDRP stats are really going to underrepresent the volume that's going on. With that said, it will be very difficult for us as a registrar, I believe most of the others will be the same, to provide statistics on the incidents that's going on. That's just information we don't want to share publicly. It's fair enough to say, though, that it is enough that it is a serious cause of concern, hence our participation in this particular working group and our request to take a look, a much harder look at the TDRP to try and firm up the process, make it a more effective and consistent tool in fighting inappropriate transfers.
I think one of the things that came up previously, Paul, was either yourself or James, was that if you went down the TDRP route, it would slow the entire thing down quite a bit. Would that be correct?
That is correct. That's why I said we usually calculate it's in our registrant customers' best interest to try and work it out individually with the other registrar involved, because the process is just that. It's a process. It takes time, and the registrant often is not willing to wait. You know, they want to try and resolve this as expeditiously as possible.
Okay. Michael Collins?
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I think that any data or research that we do to assess the effectiveness of a TDRP in this case where we're talking about urgency should include how long they take to be resolved, because I think that's really what we're talking about in the way of effectiveness, not whether they eventually resolved the dispute, but whether they were able to do it in an urgent manner. That's all.
Right. Okay.
This is Mikey again. So I think there are a couple of things that we can pull out of this conversation. First, I think there's a difference between incidents, number of times that the formal process is actually invoked, and effectiveness. And I would throw in the proposition that part of the measure of effectiveness is the degree to which the option of the TDRP helps the registrars resolve the disputes before they get to the TDRP. And I'd also support Paul's comment and others that maybe what we need to do is take a look at the TDRP to find ways to make it more effective than it is right now. Because it sounds to me like we have agreement that we want to improve this for a variety of reasons. Whether or not there are a lot of actual incidents, because right now what's happening is that the registrant's interests are being protected essentially one layer away or one layer before they reach the TDRP, and perhaps we want to strengthen that to make it more consistent. I mean, if the dispute is over a name that transfers between GoDaddy and Network Solutions, my confidence level is pretty high. If the dispute happens where there's a registrar that doesn't participate for one reason or another, life gets a little bit more complicated. And so I think that my concern is that word assessment in this column. I think we could take a long, long time constructing that assessment of the effectiveness, when in fact our opinion is actually fairly advanced in our thinking, and that we might want to say we're not going to wait for a research project. We're going to go ahead based on the knowledge that we have in the working group and propose a solution.
Okay.
And this is Tim. From our perspective, from GoDaddy's perspective, I would just say that it seems to us that one of the reasons why we try to resolve these without filing the dispute is that, like Paul said, it's quicker, it's in the best interest of our customers, et cetera. But I guess we feel like that probably will always be the case, that we would prefer to try to resolve that as, you know, part of our, you know, effort to provide good customer service or whatever, and that's always going to be quicker when it's done between the two parties that are directly involved. And, you know, while we may be able to look at, you know, some tweaks to the TDRP that might make it more effective or, you know, more timely or perhaps, but I don't think that it'll ever be as fast or faster than when the two parties involved just get together and resolve the problem. Because as soon as you have, you know, a third party that has to then play an intermediary or, you know, and then all of a sudden the other two parties start getting, you know, a little more concerned about what they say or what they provide. And, you know, it is not conducive to making things faster. It doesn't mean it isn't useful in cases where you can't get, you know, the other registrar to cooperate. But I don't think it's necessarily ever going to be the chosen method or the preferred method to solve a dispute, at least in our opinion.
This is Mikey. So if we were to look at the current more effective part of the process, which is the registrar-to-registrar conversation, are there any tools that you feel could be provided to make that conversation, make that informal conversation, I don't want to call it informal, but you know what I mean, that conversation more effective in that? Are there times where the threat of the TDRP is the only thing that keeps the process moving? Or is the TDRP just completely irrelevant and that we ought to acknowledge that the preferred and perhaps the only avenue for this conversation really ought to be between the registrars? If in fact hardly any of them...
This is Tim. Barbara might have a different opinion, but I think from what we see in any case, that when something goes to TDRP, it will often just go to its defaults. In other words, you know, the registry ends up having to make a decision based on the information that it has, and it doesn't really get necessarily a lot of cooperation from the other party against which the dispute was claimed against, or the other registrar. So they get the information from the filing registrar, and that's pretty much the basis upon which the decision is made. And I think that, you know, it can kind of be expected. When something happens between registrars, the issue that probably comes up most often from our experience is one of indemnification, that, you know, the parties are nervous about doing anything because you know, what they put themselves at risk of a lawsuit or who knows what if they make the wrong decision. So that's usually the thing that, you know, takes the most amount of time in resolving it between two registrars. And with GoDaddy, what we try to do is work that out, you know, with registrars who are willing to cooperate, and then we just work it out once, and we have a situation where then we can address the you know, transfer issues as they come up without having to, you know, address the indemnification issue every time it comes around. I don't know if this group could do anything about that. That probably would be a little more difficult to try to resolve. But so I don't know if that helped or not, but that's just kind of our experience.
So let Anil, George, and then Barbara Steele jump in.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment. I think it's insightful to hear that some registrars who definitely are more responsive, they feel that putting the parties together or the registrars together to resolve things is useful. I think that's a valuable point. I think the issue really lies in the absence of these more responsive registrars or smaller ones that may not use such effective methods. What do we do then? Don't we need something to help in those situations, some best practices or something to remedy that, so that the registrants who are who may be really devastated in terms of their business, what can they do?
Barbara Steele, you had your hand up.
Hi, sorry. Let me try to get somewhere where it's a little quieter. I'm actually working remotely today, so hold on just a second.
Okay. Michael Collins still has his hand up. Barbara, I'll come back to you in a minute.
Okay. I'm actually okay. Sorry.
Oh, you're okay now. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm in the garage at this point. I just wanted to say that I do agree very much with what Tim was saying and the fact that a lot of times we do get very little cooperation from the respondent to a request for enforcement that's filed with us. And I also do have some numbers relative to the number of disputes that we've seen so far. Through June of 2009, that's the information that I can release, we've seen about 209 cases filed with us. So obviously, considering that we do, you know, hundreds of thousands of transfers, that is a very, very small number. So very few of them actually.
Sorry, Barbara, is that in one 12-month period period?
Early in 2008, we had 35. That is since the transfer dispute resolution policy went into effect in 2004.
Okay, you had 35 in 2008.
Yep. And so far this year, we've seen 8 through June, which is the only information that I can release. That's the only information that's public at this point.
So it's about 1-point-something per month.
Yeah, it's very, very low.
Okay. And, yeah, so it's tiny.
So this is Mikey. It seems to me that this might be a process that's working better than we think and that we just need to describe it well for others to understand better. Because it seems to me that the idea of taking the TDRP away is a bad idea because it's the final, 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 final safety net for the really, 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 really unresponsive registrar in a really difficult conversation that otherwise normally takes place between registrars, and that we simply want to describe that process as accurately as we can without divulging secret stuff, and encourage registrars who don't participate to do that, but that if they don't, then this TDRP is the final, final, final when all other avenues fail.
Barbara? Anybody else?
This is Marika.
Hi, Marika.
One comment I had on the numbers and you know, the comments that they're low, so it must be working well. Because one of the things, you know, there's some questions related to the TRP coming up later in the follow-up PDPs that are still outstanding. And I think one of the questions that is raised in that context as well, like, is the number so low because indeed issues are resolved or because registrars, you know, don't really like going through that process because it's cumbersome, I guess there are costs involved, it takes time. So, you know, looking at a TDRP might require a bit more than just looking at how many cases are filed. And it also links to this question, as it is only possible at this stage for registrars to file a procedure, not for registrants. And I think it's one of the questions that comes up as well in the later PDP, you know, whether a discussion would need to be had, whether this process should be open as well for registrants to avail themselves of.
Okay.
This is Mikey again. We've talked a lot about this in previous PDPs, peer reviews, working groups, and it always seems to get down a question as to whether registrants should be able to pull the trigger on this or not. And one, I guess what I'm hunting for is that, is there a way for us to get some insights into how the registrar-to-registrar conversations go without giving away secret data? Because it seems to me that the real kind of consumer question here is how effective is the registrar-to-registrar? Because that's an informal one, shrouded by the need not to divulge practices. We're sort of a sticking point, you know. So I guess I'm throwing this one to Paul and Tim, especially.
Just one thing, guys. Was this meant to be a 60-minute call? So I see some people are dropping off.
Yeah, I'm going to have to jump off. This is Barbara. I'm sorry I had a hard stop date at 11.
That's no problem. Thanks, Barbara.
Yeah, I have an hour and a half. Never mind.
Marika.
This is Marika. We said at the, you know, start of the working group that, you know, in principle it would be 60 minutes, but we could go to 90 minutes if people would have time and be available, so there's no... no.
That's okay. Just double checking.
McKinley, this is Tim. I have a comment if we have time.
Yeah, let's tie this one question off, and then maybe we can adjourn. And back to Tim and Paul. I mean, you see where I'm going with this? It's as though the bulk of the issue is in a process that is difficult to document for practical reasons. Is there some creative way that we could figure out how to get some insight into how that process works? Go ahead.
Now, this is Tim. I can see about that. I think there's probably something to that effect that we could share. Again, part of the problem is that there isn't really any. I mean, the situations are so varied, you know, that there isn't any way to, you know, necessarily say this is exactly what happens in every case, because that they vary quite a bit. But I can see what we can do there. The other thing I wanted to comment on was just, you know, what Marika was saying about some of the future questions that we'll be facing. And I think, you know, one thing is that the issue of registrants supplying, you know, submitting their own TDRP, you know, that was discussed when this policy was developed. And there were a lot of reasons why that wasn't, whether it wasn't implemented. So you might want to go back and look at that when we get to that point. The other thing is that well, what happens, I think probably what the issue is that when, you know, GoDaddy will run into registrars who just are not responsive. They don't reply to an email. We can't get on the phone. You know, there's just nothing we can do. We can't get a hold of them, period.
So there's no way to resolve a transfer dispute when it comes up between those two parties. So I can imagine that when a registrar has a problem between two registrars like that, that, you know, they probably run into a similar situation. They have difficulty getting any kind of response from either one. They're just not dealing with it at all, and so the registrar is kind of stuck. And that's probably where this question about, you know, should registrants be allowed to file a TDRP kind of comes up. But I think, you know, that's a narrow way to look at it, in my opinion, in that, you know, if we have registrars like that, I think that's just one issue. And you know, it's the problem is much bigger when you have a registrar who just isn't going to be responsive to complaints or calls or their customers or anybody else. That's a whole different issue, and I think that however that's resolved, has got to be a much bigger picture than just looking at a single funnel problem like transfers or something.
Well, this is Mikey. Just on that last point, I'm always conscious of operational intrusiveness, but is there a way to find out how many times that problem pops up? Or,
which problem exactly, Mikey?
The non-responsive registrar.
Okay.
I mean, clearly one thing that would be, from the consumer standpoint, very helpful is some sunlight on this, so that if there are registrars that are repeatedly not participating kinds of conversations, that consumers know about those so that they don't use them. And that if they, because it seems if a consumer had one, if the consumer could get one registrar to respond to them, presumably their own, then they've at least got a leg up. But if they happen to subscribe using a non-responsive registrar, and then the transfer happens to another non-responsive registrar, that's when we really run into the trouble. And maybe sunlight solves that rather than a policy thing. So, you know, that's where I'm kind of hunting for creativity, because the issue is really that time when the registrant has no place to stand because neither registrar is responding.
Yep, I don't disagree, Mike. I just question whether the solution to that is, you know, whether we want to address it narrowly just for transfers or whether we want to look at it in a bigger picture way.
Data would be good.
But as far as your question about the data, you know what, I'll see what we can pull together from GoDaddy. That will be helpful to the group.
Paul Zayas has his hand up.
Yeah, just to echo what Tim just said, you know, the big picture question, a lot of excellent points were made in the last 10 minutes, and in this working group search for data points or sunshine, you know, we probably should go back to ICANN compliance staff. The challenge here is that, you know, we have to remember this group, its charter is focused on issues with the transfer policy. You know, we've seen in I can't remember if it was the beginning of this one, but certainly in other working groups where, you know, often the data that compliance staff has is sort of a little muddied because the particular problem that's reported, they don't have a high degree of granularity on the issue. A registrar that is not responsive, you know, it could very well be, it has a direct impact on an inappropriate transfer, but, you know, that could be a compliance issue just because they're not meeting the RAA requirements to have, you know, phone number and, you know, the points of contact, et cetera. You know, so we might ask staff and see if they can at least directionally shed some light. And like GoDaddy, like Tim just said, I'll go back to our staff. I just want to couch that the any stats that we might be able to provide and whatnot are probably not going to be very, very detailed because of the sensitive nature of what we're talking about. And but even if whatever we do come up with, go back to points made at the very beginning of the call. I think Michael Collins made that, you know, with all of the transfers that take place, fortunately, only a small, relatively small subset. Are there ever any problems involved? However, for those registrants who do have problems with the transfer, whether it was fraudulent or what have you, you know, that's enormous, almost incalculable, you know, what the impact is to them. And so just, you know, asking in advance for a caveat that whatever data points we may find, whatever stats we may have, look, the reason we're here working on this working group is because it's been raised up at the council level that there are issues, and we need to you know, look into them, see what can be addressed, what's realistic, and that even if the numbers seem relatively small based on the data that we can collect, that we not diminish the importance they are to the end users in trying to address or address these particular problems.
Marika, has her hand up?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to note that I'm happy to go back to the compliance team to see if they can provide any other further data on these specific issues. I might ask them to have a look at the different charter questions and provide some input in that way, so going forward you can see as well what kind of complaints they receive and if there are any specific issues they would like to raise in the context of those issues.
So they made a presentation in Seoul with the number of registrars that they'd sent breach notices to, and there was some other data, I think, which was kind of interesting. And it seems like compliance is ramping up quite a bit from what I've seen. Mikey, do you still have your hand up, or is it just left there from previously?
No, I act as a brand new hand up.
Okay.
I have lots of hands, and this is like hand number 19 and stuff. Marika,
so you're basically an octopus.
Yeah, I am. A 19-limbed octopus.
Marika, when you go to the compliance folks, could you see if you could get them to summarize the complaints by registrar? Because in a way, what I'm interested in is, and the problem with that is that the data is going to be goofy because GoDaddy's going to get lots of complaints because it's really big. So that's not really what I'm interested in. What I'm interested in is finding if the compliance folks have a way of identifying these non-participating registrars in their data.
I can definitely ask. I don't know if it's possible or whether that information is collected, but I'll definitely ask.
Okay. Anything further? No? Silence?
Well, this is Michael Collins. I only wanted to present an example of something and ask how this might play. I have heard secondhand of at least one case where someone had a domain name allegedly hijacked and then transferred, and they went to their registrar, which would have been the losing registrar in this case, and asked them to help them with it, and the registrar apparently didn't want to. Maybe they made some contacts and tried to resolve it, but beyond that, they didn't want to file a TDRP. The registrar wasn't unresponsive, but just didn't want to take that action, and told the registrant when they continued to protest that they weren't the registrant on the day it transferred, so there was nothing they could do about it. And so I think it was just an example of a case where someone I know would like to have had a TDRP available to the registrant in a case like that. That's all.
So this goes back to the thing about, I think there was something in one of the comments about changes where was it? I think it was issue C, where the special provisions are needed for a change of registrant when it occurs near the time of a change of registrar.
Michaela, can I just offer something?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, this is Paul. I just to respond to Michael. Michael, I'm not sure the specifics of the case, but the excuse that your colleague was given about their that registrant not being the official registrant at the time, that's often an answer that's given when you go through the TDRP itself by the registry operators. They will look if a name is hijacked, often because somebody's using, let's say, like a Hotmail account, so that the transfer request comes in and prima facie, it looks like it's legitimate. As far as the TDRP is concerned, that was a, quote, legitimate transfer request because of the admin contact at the time of the request was, you know, that particular email address, whether it was hijacked or redirected, et cetera.
Well, maybe that the registrar was just realistic and realized that the TDRP would not be effective and for that reason didn't want to bother with it.
It honestly, it could be any number of things, and that's part of it. I mean, there is a sense of frustration amongst some registrars about the veracity of the TDRP process.
Thank you.
So this is Mikey on that. And two thoughts. One, maybe we do need to take a look at the TDRP to address the problem that Paul just described. And then the second thought is maybe there needs to be a mechanism where a registrant can issue a cry for help that doesn't invoke the full weight of the TDRP process, the expensive, cumbersome, difficult process in that circumstance. You know, just a way for that, because I think what the goal for the registrant is getting back to Michael's example. They've at that point got nowhere to go. And if so the initial thought was, well, maybe we ought to give them access to the TDRP, and I'm pretty sold on the notion that that's not a good idea because of the nature of the TDRP. But I'm not sold on the idea that Michael's colleagues should have nowhere to turn. And maybe what we ought to do is think about a way for to take care of the registrant that's in that kind of situation that's not as cumbersome as the full-blown TDRP thing, but gives them some avenue besides just saying, well, too bad, you're done.
This is Paul. Can I respond to that?
Please.
Yeah, Mikey, if you recall...
Tim, in the queue, too, please.
Okay. Earlier on in this working group, one of our colleagues had noted that very often, in their experience, they were representing from the IPC. You know, what they'd found is that the default is to pursue some sort of legal action or perhaps a UDRP in these cases, rather than they said in some cases their clients weren't even aware of the TDRP process. And I think the group as a whole said, you know, we keep in the back of our minds. One of the outcomes of this might be, you know, recommendation for more education about what mechanisms are possible. With that said, I very much agree and would like to underscore the point you just made that making the TDRP directly available to registrants is probably a very bad idea, certainly at this point, given how the TDRP is constructed, because ultimately you must have registrars and the particular registry involved, and I think the volume increase you would see if registrants could directly start filing their cases, filing their complaints, I should say, without full understanding of how the process works, what the details are, likely will be a very frustrating thing for all parties involved. I'd really not want to go there or even, you know, seriously start considering that. Rather, would like to look at, you know, how do we tighten up the process, and then how can we better communicate the availability of that tool to registrants who find themselves in the situation where they should avail themselves of the process.
Tim wanted to jump in, and guys, I'm very wary of time.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that, you know, the TDRP was never meant to be a, you know, cure-all for transfer issues. It was recognized, you know, that it was probably, you know, going to be limited in what could be done, because some of the problems that surround transfers aren't necessarily to do with the transfer itself. It has to do with things that occurred before the transfer that get much more complicated than what the TDRP can deal with, or at least in my opinion should deal with. It's situations such as the account, someone's account is hijacked. It's not the domains that were hijacked initially. In reality, it was the account that was hijacked. And, you know, a registrant and other contact information was changed prior to the transfer ever taking place. So if it's a, you know, any transfer dispute resolution process that sticks to resolving transfer disputes, you know, is going to be stuck at that point because, you know, it's for all practical purposes, it may have looked like a good transfer. And so that's, you know, that's about as far as it can go. If we're going to dig back into what occurred before that, then that's a whole other issue. Is there a problem that needs to be addressed, perhaps, but is that related just to transfers? I don't think so. I think it involves other aspects as well. So I think, you know, we just got to realize, too, what the limitations might be in trying to provide the TDRP, and keeping in mind that there are other processes such as the UDRP in place. But I don't want us to forget that sometimes what appears to be what results in an inappropriate transfer might have started with something that's beyond what the TDRP was even meant to deal or address with, or probably even practically can.
Okay. I see hands going up. Now, guys, we've only got about 2 minutes left, so Michael Collins, then Mikey, and please try to be, I won't say the word brief because that would be hypocritical of me, but try to be succinct.
I was just a leftover, sorry.
Okay. Mikey?
I'll be brief. I agree with the notion that we shouldn't give registrants direct access to the TDRP. I would like to just lobby one last time for the notion that registrants need a clear circuit breaker for when they get into trouble, no matter what. And I agree with Paul's notion that good education would be key, but I want to leave the possibility out there that we make in policy that circuit breaker clearer, or that suite of circuit breakers clearer to registrants than they are today.
Okay. Marika.
Yes, Marika. Just before finalizing the call, I just wanted to make sure that we get to point six, confirming the next meeting. Because if we would continue in the two-weekly schedule, we would conflict with the ALAC AXCOM meeting, and I think we have one participant from the ALAC in this group. So the proposal was to have the next call next week, and then go and get to the bi-weekly schedule if everyone agrees.
Okay, personally, I don't have any issue with there being a meeting next week. Me personally, I can only speak for myself, obviously. Does anybody else have any issues with a meeting next week?
This is Tim. I wouldn't be able to make it next week. I'll be traveling.
Okay. Anybody else have an issue with next week? Tim, do you know if James would be available next week?
Yes, James will be.
Okay, so one of you would be available anyway. Okay, could we look at scheduling it for next week and taking into account the fact that Tim won't be able to join us? Does anybody have an issue with that? Okay, Marika, can we proceed like that, please?
Okay, perfect.
No offense, Tim, but we'll take James next week.
Well, that's fine, and I'm really in this primarily as the liaison for the council, although I do have a lot of opinions from the registrar's point of view, but so that's fine.
Okay. Right then, I think we better wrap this up.
Chris here. Next week the 17th, and then 2 weekly thereafter.
Or is it an extra one? And they just clarify.
Marika, could you clarify that, please?
Yes, unless the group decides that it would like to start meeting on a weekly basis. Initially, when we started off, there was a preference to have bi-weekly calls, considering all the amount of other stuff going on. So, in principle, the proposal was to go bi-weekly again, unless the group, there has been a change in workload and the group feels they can go to weekly calls.
So, just to clarify, we'd have the 17th, and then when would the next one be after that?
17, and then it's the 1st of December.
1st of December.
Okay, fine.
Then the 15th.
Yeah, I personally prefer the bi-weekly.
Yeah, I second that.
That's my personal preference. Does anyone have a strong preference for going weekly? No. Fine. Okay. We'll move on with that, and if there's any issues, people can just let us know via the list, okay? Thanks, everybody, for your time. And for those of you lucky enough, we'll get to spend time with each other later this evening.
Woohoo! Hot diggity dog.
See you then, Michele.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Later.